have shekel is to atone for the fact that we're being counted, so we won't get, if I understand correctly,
Ein
Hara. So I guess my question is, why does counting in and of itself subject us to that possibility? What's the underlying thing about counting, number one? And number two, how does the giving the half shekel protect us or atone for that?
It's pretty clear from some of the things that they did when they wanted to count. You could count stones, just not people. In other words, each person gave a pebble, that would be good. Even though there was nothing to do with it. You couldn't buy anything with stones.
So that same act would protect a population from...
Right. It's not counting people.
Okay, so what's the intrinsic issue with counting? What's happening with counting?
So let's step back a little bit. If somebody is doing something which is a violation of one of the mitzvahs, and there are witnesses there who warn this person that what he's doing is such a violation, and this person says, okay, I understand what you're saying, and they say to him, you realize that if you do such and such, that these are the consequences. And he says, I understand that, and I'm going to do it anyway. And then he proceeds to do it very promptly thereafter. So the witnesses are obliged to go to court, testify what transpired. The court is obliged to process what's been testified before them, to interrogate the witnesses, to establish their personal integrity, to establish the clarity of what they saw, and so on. And then the court is obligated to carry out the sentence after deliberating on whether all the pieces are in place. And so it could be capital punishment, corporal punishment, financial penalty, financial settlement, whatever. The way in which this entire business is established is by virtue of the fact that there were witnesses to what transpired. There's a Meiranayim who says that to the extent that Hashem is Shomer mitzvahs, Hashem is also bound by the Torah to some extent. I mean, he's created a world in which that's the way in which the world works, and he's committed himself to some extent that he's going to honor the structure of the world. So when a Jew does something which he's not supposed to do, so Hashem is a witness. But in order to be able to carry out a sentence, you need two witnesses. So Hashem does not have to react to that act because he's the only witness. If there's another Jew and that Jew knows about it, and he doesn't go to court with it, Or perhaps there is no court, there is no base, there is no Sanhedrin, it's like in our times. And so he goes and he talks, he gossips to a friend, he speaks Lashon Hara. So now, if no one raises the issue, Hashem is still not bound, but there is a power which Hashem is introduced into the world, namely the Satan. And the Satan will come up and say, I know that so-and-so did the Avera, because he knows, because he convinced them to do the Avera, but he'll say, so-and-so did the Avera. So Hashem will say to him, well, too bad, you're only one witness. So the son will say, no, so-and-so just spoke Lashon Hara about him. He's also a witness. That very act of speaking Lashon Hara is a testimony. So now Hashem is constrained to act because there are two witnesses. There's the Sultan and there's his prisoners for Lashon Hara. There are times when we underestimate the force, the power, the authority, the extensive effect that we as human beings have. So just the speaking Lashon Hara can sometimes have us join forces with the Satan. Our looking at somebody critically, in other words, not necessarily critically, but you know, we don't, I can never get this straight. The word to begrudge means that you don't want the person to have it. If you begrudge somebody, then you don't want it to have it, right? So you look at somebody begrudgingly.
You don't necessarily want it yourself.
Whatever it is. So you look at somebody begrudgingly. That act of looking that way. Now, you didn't say anything, but just as this is a world of doing. So in our world, in order to get something, you got to do it. At the very least, you got to say something. But there are worlds of higher realms wherein speech is the actor, and there are realms where thoughts are the actors. Now, if a person looks at somebody begrudgingly, there is a realm in which that becomes a statement of, I don't think that person deserves it. So there's somebody who looks at somebody and the feeling in their look is, I don't think you deserve this, or you didn't have it, whatever it is. In that realm, that opens up a file. The file says, well, maybe he really doesn't deserve it. So, an Ankara, because of the enormous power of a person. A person is a nuclear reactor. I mean, just like in a nuclear reactor, just the most delicate departure from a fairly narrow corridor of safety can create all kinds of spin-offs and begins to spin out of control. When a person is so extraordinarily powerful, that if a person looks at somebody begrudgingly, the result is that there is a process begun which says perhaps a person does not deserve to have what he's got. And that can have all kinds of repercussions. The converse is also true. A person can look at somebody very generously, and that will then begin a process that says, well, maybe this person really should be blessed with more. Before Moshe Rabbeinu dies, Hashem invites him to come up the mountain, and he should look over Eretz Yisrael. He shows him Jewish history. He shows him things that he shows him every area of Israel, every tribe, and what happened. What happened? You know, the weight. Moshe Rabbeinu could have gone where all the righteous people go. He would have seen what's going on in history from the same place that other great tzaddikim. Moshe Rabbeinu's look changed history. When Moshe Rabbeinu looked at Eretz Yisrael and he saw the geography of Eretz Yisrael, and Hashem showed him some of the things that happened, Moshe Rabbeinu's look was something that invited a much more benevolent, a much more generous judgment of this, just because the way he looked at it. The way he looked at it, it had repercussions in the way that these things were then going to be processed. In any event, so that's one of the approaches to Einar. One of the approaches to Einar is that somebody who looks at somebody with a kind of narrow or begrudging or jealous intent, depending on how powerful or what that person's connections are with higher realms. It could be a very holy person who looks at somebody very quickly. We used to say, the Talmud says that the sages could look at a person and reduce them to a pile of bones. But people like Bilam, people like Bilam who were connected to the forces of darkness had the capacity to invoke this very critical kind of examination in ways which brought the attribute of judgment to bear on a situation in a very severe way. So now here's the thing. If you look at every person individually, so and number one, there's a limited amount of damage that you can do, but there's also the realization that every person has their peckle. Get a person, so you say, at first blush, oh, this guy's driving a Lexus. But then you realize he may be driving a Lexus, but he's got a sick wife at home. He's just voted out of his, he was a CEO, and they just trounced him. I mean, if you look at everybody, everybody's an individual, has their peckle. And the popular notion is that if everybody took their peckle and put it into the middle of the town square, and you piled up, and then you look at because everybody is always envious of the next person, but if you took a look at all the peckle after you go, and you pick your own one, you take your own one back. You wouldn't want anybody else's pick. But everybody's got a pick. I can tell you that there are times I look out over the show and I think about everybody's pick. I just look from person to person. Everybody's got a pick. So there's a woman who came to see me the other day, and with her husband. He's a physician in Chicago. So my life is so. I mean, he said, "We're not coming from me. We're coming from my wife. My wife is just having a lot of problems." So he said, "So she said, tell me what happened to her in the last year." So it was, it was. She said, "I just, God doesn't like me, and I find it hard to daven." I said to him, "You know what?" I said to him, "I'm also struggling with this thing." And I started telling her one of the reasons that I was struggling. I think when she left, she felt a whole lot better because of the things that I told her that I was struggling with were, I think, a whole lot worse than the things that she was struggling with. I mean, that wasn't the only thing that I told her, but, there's a perspective. But the point over here is that if you look at a single individual, there is less likelihood that you'll have that jaundiced eye because you're aware of the fact that a given individual nobody's life is perfect. But when you look at a group, you ignore those kinds of differences because when you begin to look at a group, you then are generalizing. When you're counting people, something new emerges, and that something new can be very powerful and invites that kind of anger. So you're counting stones. You end up with, here's a nation, 603,350 people, whatever. You arrive there by a process that where you weren't your object of observation was not people, but as you're counting people, you're connecting with the group. You're connecting with these souls. And as you're going on, you're becoming more and more aware of the fact that you're in touch with a lot of power, a lot of whatever. And it's sometimes it's not particularly conscious. It's just, so if you're kind of even for a minion, there are all kinds of things that you should do rather than to get not one, not two. Or you say, Hoshia es amecho, gorech es nachal secho, gorech. Because there's 10 words in that. In that.
Do we have a minion? Yes, we have a minion.
You say that a Polish minion had about 25 people because there was someone, there was this Polish community. We kind of minion. Is by saying this pasuk of Hoshia Samecho. So instead they did this song. Hoshia Samecho, Baruch Hashem Samecho, Urem, 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 Urem. So it's really a distraction.
Counting people is that the counter effect. What it is he's counting or is affected by what it is he's
both.
There's no way in which that subjectivity can be taken out of it. So if that's the case, what's the half shekel got to do with it?
No, because the point is that then your focus is not on people. You're counting, you're not looking at people.
Why not use the half shekel?
The half shekel was really used. There's several reasons. One reason is because the half shekel was used for the karbonos. Every year they used to collect the half shekel, and those were for the karbonos. See, when you brought every morning and every late afternoon, you brought a korban on behalf of the nation. Everybody had contributed.
Musafim also part of that.
What?
Musafim.
Everything. All of the karbonos. All the karbonos. All karbonos. Everybody had an equal sharing. So there was a. So there certainly wasn't a quality of the fact that there was atonement going on over here,
okay.
Because everybody had a part of the Kabbalah Tzibur.
Yes.
But there was another component, which was the fact that when people gave halves, it was a statement about the fact that we don't stand alone and our contribution is not one which is meaningful unless I'm joined with others. So the other half could be another Jew. In other words, I only become whole when I share, when I am joined with another Jew. Or it could be the fact that Klal Yisrael in general is responsible to do their share, and it's only a half, it's only a portion, and the other portion is always, whether we're a success or not, whether what we do is achieves whatever result we want it to, it's always up to God. You know, the arrogance that what we do determines that we'll be successful, or we're gonna get better, or we're gonna the result that we want will be a direct outcome. We have our thing to do. The Rebbeinu wants us to do our part, and then he does his part. And if that's a perspective, if you look out at life, but the recognition that we're supposed to do what we're supposed to do, and let go, and let God. There's humility, there's an understanding that it's really not up to us other than to make the kind of choices that we have to make in response to what's going on in our lives, but the rest of it is all up to the Almighty. So it's a perspective. The shekel really frames the way in which we look out at life. So when we're counted, we're not counted by a whole, we're counted by a half. If you're just counted like a number, that doesn't do anything. But if somebody, when they count you, makes you feel like you count,
right?
That's the concept of nosai. Lift up his head.
Yeah.
And let them know that they are unique, indispensable.
So it's unique, indispensable on the one hand, and it's incomplete and vulnerable on the other hand.
Mm.
So the half shekel, can we say, is the thing that, because it carries the halfness, the incomplete and vulnerableness that we're then giving over to the Rebbeinu Shalom through this process, makes that incompleteness, fills the incompleteness in a positive way.
Someplace I think it says that Moshe Rabbeinu was one of the few people who really could count Bnei Yisrael without using Matzah Shechel, because he was a Tevayim. His eye was so generous and so mm-hmm. perfectly good that he could count them and make them count. All right, gentlemen, improving Jewish eyesight.